Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
We'll go to 11. Look, right across the board. 11, right. 11,
and most of
11.
And amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah.
All the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn... Listening to the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? In my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any question before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers and Naples area, streaming around the country and, yes, around the world. I do apologize for a couple little technical glitches we had there. I think we're up and rolling just fine now, so everybody that left, come on back. Yes. We're glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We're going to have Congressman Jim McDermott from the state of Washington, the 7th District out there, Seattle. He's going to be on to talk to us this afternoon about the Emergency Extended Unemployment Compensation Act to extend unemployment benefits to so many people who are out of work. We'll have him on in the second hour. I believe it's around 4:15 that Congressman McDermott will be with us, so I look forward to that. He always a great guy. I've met him several times in Washington, and very, very interesting man, and a very astute congressman. Wish we had more like him in Congress. I certainly do. What else? We've got we had the second reading of Dennis Kucinich's bill being read last night. He's going to force that to a vote. I don't look for anything to happen on it, of course. I don't know. As far as that goes with Dennis Kucinich, and I admire him so much for standing up for decency and honesty and for doing the right thing in Washington, D.C. There's so few that do these days. So many people who go there with the right ideas and get themselves they just get themselves in over their heads right away with the power and money and all that. It's just they get compromised, and it's just a damn shame. Anyway, it's time for the general election to get started in for real this time. Time to get serious about it. We see punches starting to go back and forth between Obama and McCain. We'll have a lot to say about McCain today. Johnny McCain, John Sidney McCain, John, you got to be kidding me, McCain, whatever you want to call him. It's hard for me to believe that he is the candidate, but then again, they did put up Bob Dole, so I must keep that in mind. I don't know who's the worst candidate, Dole or McCain. I'm not quite sure. Haven't made up my mind on that yet, but anyway, they're both going to suffer the same fate. That's a virtual certainty. We have talked so much about ending the war lately, and I think, I've asked myself the question today, what did we learn after the last election? What did I learn? And I know I've learned something important, and the important thing that I've learned is elections don't end wars. And you know what? I doubt this election is going to end the Bush occupation in Iraq either. Really, I feel that way. And I do hope and prove that I'm proven wrong. I certainly hope I am. And when you think back on it, in January of 2007, and I guess what I'm getting at here is where is the protest movement here in the country? We had a big protest against the occupation and the war back in January 2007. I didn't get to go, but had some friends over. I was there, I think, the day before. Anyway, were there any results from that protest that have helped end the war? And thinking back upon it, none that I can see, except for the slight possibility that it kept the whole thing from getting a lot larger and maybe even kept the Bush administration from restarting the draft. But frankly, and you've heard me relay these comments to you before, frankly, I'm ashamed and I'm disappointed in Americans for not mounting a better effort to end the carnage in Iraq. And here we are, possibly headed into another conflict in Iran this time around, something that could have far worse consequences for this country and for the Middle East than the Bush occupation of Iraq. And yet Americans are all sitting around and saying, oh, well, I can't do anything about it. What will be, que sera, sera. And I would also argue that it's essential for the anti-war movement, if you can even call it that now, to kind of reinvigorate itself. I shouldn't say it that way. There is an anti-war movement, however small. Lots of people are against the war and against the Bush occupation of Iraq, but not many are willing to get out and do something about it. In their hearts, so many people are against it, but it's not like it was back in Vietnam. There just aren't those huge numbers of crowds that will get out there every week. And I think it is essential for this movement to reinvigorate itself and get out into the streets again in very large numbers, no matter who gets elected in November. And no politician is going to move to end the war without pressure from us. It's just too easy for them to defer to the generals and the civilians in the Pentagon. And mainstream media tells us and will tell us even more as the election season heats up that neither party wants to appear weak when it comes to defense. You hear that said about the Democrats all the time. Oh, we don't want to appear weak. That's how the Republicans have won the election the last couple of times. They've been strong on defense. And they've proven the Democrats aren't, and the Democrats just, they crouch in fear over in the corners. Oh, please don't make us seem like we're weak on defense again. Please don't, we don't want to appear like we're a bunch of doves and we'll never protect the country. Don't do that to us, please. And you see that. You see that cowardice from the party. And what this really means is that no politician wants to stand up to the war industry. Especially since they get millions of dollars from the corporations involved. And even more importantly, it's the war industry that helps to prop up the U.S. economy. You stop and think about that. Without the billions of taxpayer dollars flowing into their cash registers, corporations like General Dynamics and who else? Boeing and Lockheed Martin and dozens of others would flounder worse than the U.S. auto industry has. So, like a junkie needing a stronger fix every single day, the Pentagon puts more and more money into its addiction, if you will, its deadly addiction, killing soldiers and civilians and stealing money from the public piggy bank and ravaging the nation's soul, in my opinion. The politicians in Congress, meanwhile, act like the dealer on the street, taking the money put up by the Pentagon and copping the drug of death from those that manufacture it. And lost in this whole dynamic of money and death is the real feel, the real fact that it's our money the Pentagon and the politicians are using for their ill-advised endeavors. And I'm not suggesting you stop paying your taxes, unless you want to go that way. But I am suggesting that we, the people of the United States, demand a more humane use of the money the government does take from us. And think what this country could be if we didn't squander, and we're at the point now, trillions of dollars on needless military spending, extravagant, over-the-top military spending. We spend as much as the rest of the world added together on defense. And I'm no longer willing just to call it defense. Offense is more like it lately. But when you think of all that money, think of the infrastructure improvements we could have. Think of the educational reforms we could have in this country. The health care, the senior care. I mean, it's almost unbelievable that we spend so much on protection. And I really believe if we keep going down this path, the day is coming when we might ask, protection of what? Because we will have sunk so low economically as a country, there won't be a whole hell of a lot left to protect. We citizens tried. We elected a Democratic-controlled Congress in 2006, and they've got a shameful record on standing up to the Republicans on the war. And yes, I'm completely aware of the obstructionism that's taken place. I'm completely aware of that. But still, the Democrats have done very, very poorly. Further examples of the Democratic Party stance can be found on their support for the war on Iran and almost unanimous support for the Patriot Act. Stop and look back at those two issues alone and see what kind of Democratic support they had for. They had great support on for those. And other repressive measures that the Bush administration has introduced. So, there's just something tying these strains of thought together, and that's some kind of a belief that there was a democratic government in this country before 2001. And those who believe, those that believe that has ended the democracy the way we knew it to be. So do many of the cynics. The fact is, this government has been getting less and less democratic for decades now, except in its form. The rise of the national security state, the elimination of the left from the labor movement and the press in the 1950s. This movement waged against the popular movements in the 1960s and the 70s by the government, and the economic disenfranchisement from whole classes of people, and their recreation into an underclass under Reagan and Bush. They're all part of the history that the Bush regime has continued. They didn't miss a step. They kept right on going. We can restore democracy in this country. We can restore it to what it was at one time. We can restore it to what we believe democracy should be, and what the founders thought it would be, and what the founding fathers of this country put it down on paper to be. Our democracy is nothing like that anymore. It's remained the same in some areas. We still do have many freedoms, but we've had many of them taken away, whether you realize it or not. As I mentioned yesterday, we are that frog in the boiling pot of water. And I don't think a lot of people, most especially in just the past handful of years, have understood it all. The ramifications of some of the measures the Bush administration has taken against the people of this country. Security measures, supposedly to protect us. Spying on us with our telephone numbers and our on the internet and any way they can. Let me ask you a question, all of you listening right now. Do any of you who have protested the war, do any of you who have protested and spoken out against the Bush administration, do any of you know that you are not being spied upon? Do you know that? There was a time in this country, not so terribly long ago, when you could, with a great deal of assurance, you could sit where you are right now and say, "Guy, that's ridiculous. Of course I'm not being spied on. I live in America." The idea that you would think that my government is spying on me is absurd. That's what you would be able to say only just a few years ago. But I ask that question now, and I ask it in seriousness. Do you know, if you've been outspoken against the Bush administration or the Bush occupation in Iraq, do you know that you're not being spied upon? And I know what the answer to that is. You don't know. You don't know. Every single one of you who has lifted a finger against the Bush administration in word, in deed, in thought, in a protest rally, on the internet, maybe on the telephone, you, my friends, are suspect in the Bush administration. You have lost that freedom that you once had. So this democracy of ours, and we still, I think, on the balance of the scales, we can still call it a democracy. But the scales are tipping, my friends. We are gradually having our freedoms eroded little by little by little. Drip, 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 drip. And I'm afraid the balance has shifted. And I'm afraid that if we don't take the bull by the horns, as it were, one of our favorite terms on the farm, and turn this around ourselves, you and me, it can't be turned around. I think if we leave it to the politicians, if we leave it up to their designs on what they want to do, and what their sponsors, and what I mean by sponsors, of course, are the corporatists that pay their way, that buy them, that put them in office. If left to their own designs, I think you know where we will go. So, what I'm getting at it once again here, it's up to you, it's up to me, it's up to all of us. Not only to elect some people that we think will actually do our bidding, but then afterwards to keep their feet to the fire and not just like we did when we elected our Democratic Congress in 2006. We all celebrated for a while and said, oh, good, we've got a Democratic Congress now. We can relax for a little while. They're going to end this war. There's been no serious effort whatsoever to end this war. Nothing. Nothing that you could call any kind of a serious effort. So I will say once again, yes, it's the Bushies. Yes, it's the neocons, it's the corporatists, it's all these people that have put us where we are. But it is also the wolves in Democrats' clothing that are the predators that we need to be aware of, and there are many. Those that say one thing when running for office and then do another when they're safely ensconced in their plush new offices. Of course, there are allies in the mainstream political scene, and we should encourage those folks to work with our agenda, not bend the agenda to theirs. And like I said before, elections have yet to stop a war. And I doubt elections will stop this war. But you and I can stop this war. It'll be up to you and I to stop this war, not the politicians. That doesn't mean the elections aren't important, because they are. We've got to get the right people in, the right people we know that we can push the direction that we need to go. You're listening to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. You're welcome to give us a call and put in your 2 cents worth, maybe even three. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Once again, we're going to have Congressman Jim McDermott on in the second hour of the program to talk about the Emergency Extended Unemployment Compensation Act, whereas we will get an additional 13 weeks unemployment for folks that are out of work. And, hey, this is getting to be a big problem. A lot of people out of work. And if you saw Congressman McDermott's speech on the floor today, you will know that he's serious about this, and you will know that we better be serious about this. The good, hard-working people of this country, many whom have lost their jobs through no fault of their own, because of the Bush economy, they've lost their job. They deserve a helping hand from all of us. Maybe you're one. So many people like to say, no, I'm not in favor of any of that kind of stuff, and so many Republicans are... I'm going to tell you something. I bet there's just as many Republicans drawing unemployment as there are Democrats, so keep that in mind. We're going to pause for a quick break. We hope you'll be here when we get back. I'm sure you will. So don't go away.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Please welcome Bright Eyes.
When the president talks to God, are the conversations brief or long? Does he ask to rape our women's rights and send poor farm kids off to die? Does God suggest an oil hike when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, are the consonants all hard or soft? Is he resolute all down the line? Is every issue black or white? Does what God say ever change his mind when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, does he fake that drawl or merely nod? Agree which convicts should be killed, where prisons should be built and filled? Which voter fraud must be concealed when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, I wonder which one plays the better cop. We should find some jobs, the ghetto's broke. No, they're lazy, George, I say we don't. Just give them more liquor stores and dirty coke. That's what God recommends. When the president talks to God, do they drink near beer and go play golf? While they pick which countries to invade, which Muslim souls still can be saved? I guess God just calls a spade when the president talks to God. When the president talks to God, does he ever think that maybe he's not? That voice is just inside his head when he kneels next to the presidential bed? Does he ever smell his own when the president talks to God? I doubt it. I doubt it. Phil Mishmish. Phil Mishmish.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon here on the Guy James Show. Liberal Democratic Talk Radio. That's right. You heard that right. You didn't hear me say that word progressive. You heard me say liberal. And damn proud of it. Always have been. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the program this afternoon. Love to have you. Yes, we would. What do you think about this list that's come out for the veepstakes, for the vice presidential sweepstakes on the Democratic side? What do you think? Isn't it something? We're not hearing hardly anything about John McCain's vice presidential candidates list. Very, very little. Very little. Why is that as opposed to ours? Ours meaning we Democrats, we liberals. Interesting list. And I think it's interesting that four of the people on the list, the list that I've seen anyway, so far, I think it's interesting that I think Kent Conrad is the one that let the cat out of the bag on this, that these are some of the names that he saw on it. But four of them are from Virginia. What does that tell you? What does that tell you? And by the way, I see Jones. Is it Jones? One of Obama's selection committee that was ahead of Fannie Mae and got the loans from Countrywide and all. He quit the panel today, the vice presidential panel that Obama had picked. So we'll have somebody take his place. He said he didn't want to in any way interfere with and have an emphasis put on him and take away from Barack Obama. So he withdrew from that position, and I'm sure Barack will have somebody else on it very soon. And it does go back to what Barack Obama said yesterday. How far do you take the vetting? You have somebody vet the vetter who vet the vetter who vet the vetter vet the vetter. I don't know. But we've got retired General James Jones, a former Marine, who was the NATO Supreme Allied Commander. Very impressive credentials. Of course, Hillary Clinton. One that I was very surprised to see on this list is John Kerry. Very surprised to see that. John Edwards. We've heard John Edwards that he say that he would not accept it. Of course, we've heard that before from politicians. Evan Bayh, who's been on everybody's list for the last several years. Evan Bayh's on the list again. Evan Bayh is a little vanilla for me. I mean, I understand wanting to try and grab Indiana and all, but having Evan Bayh is certainly no guarantee that you're going to grab Indiana. Of course, Kathleen Sebelius, governor from Kansas. We got Ted Strickland, governor from Ohio. We got Mark Warner, Tim Kaine, Jim Webb, another Virginian. Bill Nelson. I say again, Bill Nelson. Okay. Yes, I do find that funny. I'm a Floridian, you know. I'm sorry, I can't help it. Jack Reed, Joe Biden, Chris Dodd, Tom Daschle, and Sam Nunn. Now, there are some great choices on there. You got to admit. I mean, we had the finest group of presidential candidates we have ever had, and could there ever be a better list of vice presidential candidates than that list I just read you? I'm sure there are some of you that would like to add this person or that person, but as a nucleus for a group of candidates, man, just plain terrific. Outstanding. Got that Kathleen Sebelius on there. I mean, she's heads up, former governor of Ohio's daughter. Ted Strickland, doing a great job as governor of Ohio. I mean, Joe Biden, hell yes. I mean, there's things that I don't agree with almost all of these people, but Chris Dodd, come on. Sam Nunn, not Tom Daschle. I don't want Tom Daschle. I'm just venting my opinion here. I don't want Tom Daschle. Tim Kaine might be a good choice. Webb, I don't know for sure yet. Mark Warner. If you're going to make me bet on this right now, if you're going to say, Guy, we got to go to Vegas and we got to put down our money on this. And by the way, remind me to tell you about what the odds are in Vegas right now for the general election. There's a, not actually in Vegas, but there's a poll. Bloomberg, I think, has it up about if you're going to bet on president who would be in, I think, Obama's head, like 62 to 35% on it. Anyway, if you made me bet, if you really grabbed me and said, hey, take your last $5 and bet it on one of these candidates to be vice president, I would say you're going to be Mark Warner from Virginia. I interviewed Mark not too long ago at the Campaign for America's Future event in Washington. Let me tell you something, and I'm sure most of you know this already, but if you don't, Mark Warner is one savvy dude. Mark Warner, very often, very often when you hear people in the Beltway, people that I know there talk about candidates and so forth, they talk about Mark Warner as very, and they use that word, Kennedy-esque. And he is. He's a young man. He's good-looking. He's very well-spoken, outspoken. He would have probably thrown his hat in the ring this time. He personally told me that he got outvoted by his family this time around to put his hat in the ring for the presidency. He's got a couple of daughters and his wife, and they thought that at this time in his life is something he shouldn't do. But Mark Warner, I think he'd make a great, great candidate. I'm not saying that he's my favorite out of the group, but he would certainly be up there at the top. He's damn good. I like Hillary. I like, of the ones that I think would take this job, I certainly like Sam Nunn. I certainly like Joe Biden. I like Chris Dodd. Who knows? But if you made me bet, I'm gonna say that Mark Warner will be the one. We shall see. On the Republican side, doesn't matter. I shouldn't say it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter to me. Whoever it is going to be in the dustbin of history because they're going to be a loser. And how many losing vice presidents can you think of in the other party, you know, down through the years? I can think of a lot of them. But I just don't think it's to be for John McCain this time around. I really don't. 866-546-5254. Now, what we very often hear, what is the main mantra, the two things that you hear most of all from the Republican candidates when they run for office these days? Number one is, man, you better, and I'm going to paraphrase them, but you know exactly what I'm saying when we read between the lines, and you don't have to read between the lines necessarily to get the gist of what they're saying. But the fact is they're always saying, well, we're going to protect you. We're going to protect you, and those Democrats won't. They're soft on on protection, soft on defense. And if you elect a Democrat, why? Well, they're just going to blow the hell out of us in no time. Maybe tomorrow. That's what they're going to tell you. So if you want to feel safe, if you want to go to bed at night and know that you're going to wake up in the morning and still have your house standing and still have Americans running this country, you better vote for a Republican because we're the only ones who take care of you. And that's worked very well for them. Worked very well for them. And of course, they've been the family of family values, you know, the party of family values. Toss that out the window. We have learned a humorous lesson, I would say, in the past few years that they're most definitely not the party of family values, and that the evangelical community has nearly given up on them because, as you all know, they promised the evangelical community the moon and then gave them the finger once they got in office. And that's a fact. That's just how it is. They have done damn near nothing for the evangelicals. So are we ever going to do this? We're going to do that? Yeah. And the evangelicals have finally come to realize that they've gotten the shaft from the Republican Party. So they're not all that enamored this time around. You don't hear that many of them this time preaching from the pulpit. Maybe they will later on. Maybe they'll surprise me, but I don't think so. I don't think you ever see them as vociferously doing that again as they did during the last election. I don't think that'll ever happen again. I think they learned their lesson, particularly amongst the younger evangelicals. They've gotten the message that gods and guns and all that isn't necessarily all there is to life. They've learned their lesson that this family values crap that the Republican Party put out is nothing but that crap and a big pile of it, a big stinking pile of it. So I don't believe you're going to see them go to the polls in record numbers this year. Maybe they'll stay home. I don't know what they'll do. I know for a fact they're not enamored with John McCain in any special way, and you don't hear them going around saying, well, he's a good Christian man, like they did about George W. Bush. And they've learned that they're a good Christian man. George Bush was about as big a liar as you could ever put in the White House. They've learned that lesson. They've learned that their pastors all told them to go out and vote for George W. Bush because he was a good Christian man. And they've seen the results from it. They've seen what that good Christian man, him and his pal Dick Cheney and all their good friends in Washington, they've seen what those folks did. They understand. There's a huge percentage of them against this occupation in Iraq, too. There's a huge percentage of them that don't like the fact that thousands of Americans have come home in coffins when this war, when this occupation that Bush started out was going, they're going to greet us as liberators. You all remember that. Mission accomplished and all that. No, no. You're not hearing it this time. You're not hearing the James Dobsons and the Jerry Falwells. I guess we're not going to hear from Jerry anymore. Or the Pat Robertsons, or the Richard Lands, or I could go on and on and on and on. You're not hearing them much from them this time around, are you? No. First of all, probably the darling of the conservatives this time around was Mitt Romney. And we all know what a joke that was. Mitt Romney, conservative? Mitt Romney, liberal? Mitt Romney... Does anybody know what Mitt Romney really is? Does anybody really know? Does Mitt Romney know? He's claimed to be everything. But he was the darling of the conservatives. Well, you know, he'll take care of our money. He'll do this, he'll do that, and he'll do that. But he was a Mormon. He was a Mormon. And when all the evangelicals found that out, well, you know. You know. So I don't know where they'll go with his vice presidency. I wonder if they'll give it to Mitt Romney because of the fact that he's a Mormon, and would they not give it to him because of that? You bet your ass. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know who else is on their list. Stop and think about it. Their bench is their bench is rather slim, wouldn't you say? Stop and think of all the second stringers for the Republicans right now. Stop and think. How many of you can remember right now all of the Republican candidates for president? Can you? How many of you remember that Tom Tancredo was one? There was a bunch of losers. That was a bunch of losers. Duncan Hunter. And Ron Paul. Yes, sir. That's quite a group over there. So when you take a look at their bench, if you're talking about a sports team, a baseball team, basketball team, their bench is pretty light, if you'd ask me. Ours, man, oh man, oh man, what a group that I just mentioned. So I'll get off of that for now, but I would be interested to hear your opinion and who you think is going to get to be the vice president this time around, who you think is going to join Barack Obama in the White House and the old executive office building. We shall see. You know, I got several interesting emails since yesterday. Very interesting emails. And from folks telling me that they were Jewish. Telling me that they cannot vote for Obama. Telling me they will not vote for Obama. Because last year he said, and let me quote here what he said. That's why I think this was a concentrated effort, this letter writing. The letters were all too similar to suit me. You know, once in a while you can see that happening and you know what's going on. But Barack Obama made a statement, nobody is suffering more than the Palestinian people. And that was in every one of these emails that I got. Really, I wonder what's the point. Is anybody going to dispute that? Nobody is suffering more than the Palestinian people? I mean, I'm not comparing them to the people in Darfur and all that, although you could. I don't see what's wrong with that statement. I really don't. But there seems to be a bone of contention right now, and I really do believe this little campaign of all these emails I got is fairly well orchestrated. Because every one of them mentioned that nobody is suffering more than the Palestinian people was the comment from Barack Obama, and that's why they can't vote for him. Well, I can vote for him. Before I got going off on that side subject there about protection, what's the second most thing, the most prolific comment that you hear about an election coming up? That you're hearing from McCain now every day, every time he speaks, he's saying this, and it's been the mantra from the Republicans for a long, long time, ever since Ronald Reagan got in, and Reagan's the one who really started this. The tax and spend liberals. The tax and spend liberals. Well, we've all learned the lesson that we've got a lot of tax and spend Republicans, don't we? In fact, they literally ran our economy into the ground. They taxed and they spent, and they cut the taxes on their rich buddies, and it just didn't work out so well, now did it? But the mantra that you hear constantly, just pounding and pounding and pounding away at it every day, is McCain in his ever-so non-eloquent way, is taxes. Well, you know, that Barack Obama, when he gets in there... Well, he doesn't talk like that. I'm sorry. He doesn't talk like that. Well, when that Barack Obama gets in there, he's going to raise your taxes. Yes, he's going to raise your taxes. And I'm going to lower them. Because I'm a good Republican. I'm a good conservative Republican. I know a lot of you don't think I am, but I am. And I'm trying my damnedest to convince all of you that I'm a conservative Republican. And the way I'm doing that is to tell you I'm going to cut your taxes. Wouldn't you love to hear sometime? Wouldn't you just love to hear sometime? Some Republican, get them cornered someplace. Hey, tell me something, pal. Just how low would you cut taxes if you had your chance? You're always talking about cutting taxes. After one tax cut and another tax cut and another tax cut, you're still talking about tax cut. How low would you cut the taxes? Would you cut them so low that you couldn't afford that $500 billion on defense spending anymore? Would you? Would you cut them so low that you couldn't afford that that gift subsidy to the oil companies? What was it, $17 billion? Would you cut them so low that you couldn't afford that anymore? Fact is, you'd cut them for your rich friends and you'd make the working people pay the bills. That's the way you've done it. That's the way you'd keep doing it. Now, we're having the McCain people out there pounding away again every day about how we're going to cut your taxes, and those Democrats are going to raise taxes. They're going to raise taxes. You know how the Democrats are going to raise taxes. They're going to do away with some of the tax cuts that the Republicans handed out. That's what they call raising taxes. Let's say you made $1 million, you paid $100,000 in taxes, you had it cut down to $50,000 in taxes, and then it gets raised back to 100 again, the way it should have been. I'm just using those numbers as an example. That's not an increase in taxes. That's just back to where it should be. But you're going to hear that from the Republicans every single day from now until Election Day. So we hunted down the numbers for you. And let's talk about some numbers. I don't like to bore you with numbers, but these numbers are important, and they're very, very interesting. Here's how the average tax bill could change in 2009 if either John McCain or Barack Obama, either one of the proposals were in place, okay? Here's what the taxes would be. Under John McCain, if you had an income of over $2.9 million, over $2.9 million, and I think we'll all agree that if you're making $2.9 mil, you're doing okay. If you're making $2.9 mil, you can probably afford a little bit extra tax, okay? But with the 2009 proposal of John McCain's, if you're making over $2.9 million, your average tax bill is going to be reduced by $269,000. A cut of 269 if you're making $2.9 million. Now, if you're Barack Obama and you're in charge, if a person's making $2.9 million, their average tax bill is going to go up by $700,000. Okay? If you make $630,000, if you make between $630,000 up to $2.9 million, and John McCain's going to do what he wants to do, you'll have your taxes cut by $45,000 a year. If Barack Obama's in, you'll have your taxes raised by $115,000. And here's where the rubber really meets the road. We can go on down through all these different plateaus that they have here. But let's get down into realistic territory. I mean, I know those big numbers are realistic territories for some folks. Certainly not for too many people I know anyway, and maybe some folks you don't. But let's get down into realistic numbers. Let's say you've got two wage earners in the family. A couple of teachers that do real well. Not any teachers in this area, but, you know, say you've got a school administrator and a fireman or something in the family, and you do real well. Under John McCain's program, your taxes are going to go down by $2,614 if your income's between $112,000 and $161,000. It doesn't make you rich. It makes you doing damn well, in my opinion. But $112,000 to $161,000, your tax bill is going to go down by $2,600 under John McCain. It's going to go down by $2,200 under Barack Obama. That's where they get kind of close. If you make between 66 and 112,000 people, we're talking $1,000. We're talking about more people now, naturally. 66,000 and 112,000, and that particularly covers a lot of two-income families. A lot. I didn't say the majority. But under John McCain, your taxes are going to go down $1,000. If you're Barack Obama, your taxes are going to go down $1,290. So see, you start to see the difference here. The closer we get to the average working family, the more your taxes are going to go down under Barack Obama, and the less they're going to go down under John McCain. You can see what's happening here. You can see exactly what's happening. Once again, the Republican candidate wants to cut the taxes in a big, big way for the people at the top of the scale and screw the people at the bottom. And it's just exactly the opposite on Obama's side. We'll get into realistic territory here. $38,000 to $66,000, which covers a lot of people. McCain wants to lower your taxes $319, and Barack Obama wants to lower them $1,042. And when we get down to the $19,000 to $38,000, which covers a lot of families, McCain wants to cut your taxes $113, and Obama wants to cut them $892. Now you tell me who wants to cut the taxes. You tell me that John McCain has any business going around this country and telling people, well, the Democrats will raise your taxes. Right there are the proposals put out by the McCain candidate and the Obama candidate, right there. And you can plainly see what's going on. The people at the top are going to reap the rewards under McCain, and the people at the bottom, like we always said on the farm, they got the wheat and we got the chaff. They got the corn and we got the cobs, baby. And over on the Republican side, Obama's tax cut is aimed squarely at the working people, exactly where a tax cut ought to be. So don't let anybody kid you on this hammering away of, oh, the Democrats are going to raise your taxes. It ain't so. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, comment, you know, a lot of people are just fooled into this, and it's usually, you know, these middle management people, you know, the ones making over 75K, who think they are somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and literally what they fail to realize, you know, there are people, you know, those who are really in charge are peons, just like a lot of us are.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And because, you know, take all where you are in Florida. You know, if you're making 75K as a family, you're doing quite well.
Particularly where I live here, I would say as a wage earner, yes, you would be doing very well here, although you wouldn't be living high on the hog. But
yeah. And, you know, it's like, I would say, you know, well, the part of Florida I used to live in, it would be almost country club if I lived way up in Volusia County.
Mm-hmm. Well, you won't hear now with your insurance bills and all. 75K will pay your bills. It'll let you live in a nice house, not an extravagant house, a nice house, and drive a decent car. Other than that, you're not going to have a whole lot.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people are fooled into that.
Oh yeah, absolutely they are.
And, you know, as far as pay scales go, you know, Florida, 75K is considered almost junior executive or whatever.
But it's the same way. You live in New York, right?
I moved back up.
Yeah. You know, you live in many places in New York. 75K isn't going to get you a whole lot, is it?
No. 75K, you're just barely making it. A lot of people who work for sanitation in New York make 75.
Yeah, and right there in that plateau, McCain says he'll cut your taxes by $1,009, and Obama will cut them by $1,290. So, you know, here we have Obama, or we have McCain hammering away at that every day, and when Obama gets the nod.
Yeah, big, big deal, you know. $1,000 is a month's rent, if that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If that.
That's right.
In New York. And many parts of Florida, too.
Oh, absolutely. I would say average, if you just want to rent an average house around here now, and I'm just talking about a regular old house or condo, nothing extravagant, 1,300 square feet and everything, just an average house, you're going to pay $1,300 bucks a month right in that neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
Rents are actually going up because of all the foreclosures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's all I have to say now.
Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate hearing from you.
Okay, no problem, dude.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Well, that is a fact, too. Rents are going up in a lot of places because of foreclosures. A lot of people getting booted out of their homes, and naturally it's making rentals hard to come by. And those that have them are taking advantage of that fact, naturally. And so it's tough. I will agree with Kevin. It depends where you live, but living here, living where he lives, $75K won't give you a lot left over. It certainly won't. I wish. Well, I can say this. I mean, I wish everybody knew. And by the way, a lot of people have asked me where I'm getting my numbers today. I'm getting my numbers from CNNmoney.com. Okay, CNNmoney.com. They get together with Fortune magazine on that, I believe, as well. And it's on the current website of CNNmoney.com and breaking down the numbers of the tax cut. So be sure and check that out. In fact, I think it's on the front page there today. And I've got a lot more numbers than that besides that, but if you want to check them out. But once again, I mean, it's quite apparent when you break down the numbers. Obama, if he's going to have a tax cut for those that really need it, and McCain's going to have a tax cut for those who don't really need it. It's that simple. But once again, we're going to demagogue everything. And who was it I heard last night? Tweety Bird? Talking about, well, why don't the Democrats go out and demagogue everything, too? If the Republicans are going to do that, I suppose the Democrats should as well. But, you know, it's just kind of nice to get the truth out of a politician now and then. So in that regard, I disagree with Tweety. I think maybe the voters right now are ready for some truth. I think they might find some actual truth very refreshing. And I think if Obama can go out and hammer these numbers home, and get people to pay attention to it, I think it'll give him a huge advantage. And have you seen, he's gotten a rather nice bounce. He's gotten, he's 7 points up in several of the polls right now, 7 points up, and that will, that difference will grow. I absolutely believe that difference will grow. So, 7 points up now, not doing too bad. We haven't even had the convention yet. Obama, whomever he picks, if he picks anybody off of that list that I read you early, that means we've got a great vice presidential candidate as well, and we'll be off and running. And I don't know. I don't know who McCain's going to take. He may as well take, I don't know, Cartman off of... It just doesn't make a lot of difference. Cartman would be a nice fit. You watch South Park, anybody? Yeah, I'll admit to have watched a few episodes of it. And I particularly like Cartman. And now I know everybody listens going, oh my God, he said he watched South Park. Well, I have. I've watched it's one of those things you get the TV on, you're going to sleep, and you got you want to see something funny. South Park can be a little bit funny. Anyway, there you go. I've let the cat out of the bag again about me personally. I just shouldn't do that. I like to be honest with you, though. Hey, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Hit On Radio Network, the best damn liberal network that there is. And we'll be back right after the news, and we expect you to be with us. You hear?
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, is out with a report on how state attorneys general have handled the mortgage foreclosure crisis. ACORN says that a handful of states, including Illinois, stand out for their A-plus efforts to protect people from predatory lending. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan says while state responses are important, The magnitude of this foreclosure crisis for working families demands a federal solution.
We really do need a comprehensive plan at the federal level, one that is going to combine funding for loan modifications on a massive scale with meaningful reforms of the mortgage lending industry. Many, many states that have taken decisive action and have committed substantial resources in response to the foreclosure crisis.
Acorn says in its report that it's pleased with progress that state attorneys general are making in trying to respond to the mortgage foreclosure crisis and to take steps to prevent it from happening again. Madigan says she and her colleagues will continue their work at the state level, but they're also looking to Washington for help.
We're closely watching the efforts of our elected officials in Washington as they work to pass a legislative package that will bolster our state-level efforts to help hardworking families hold on to the dream of home ownership.
The United Steelworkers and the Sierra Club are working toward a future of green jobs for America in the Blue-Green Alliance as we wrestle with finding a solution to global warming. Dave Foster is executive director of the Blue-Green Alliance and a former steelworkers official. He says the Labor Environmental Alliance is pursuing its Green Jobs for America campaign to help achieve a sustainable future, both for the environment and for jobs. Foster says the Blue-Green Alliance is working to create a 21st century New Deal for the global economy, just as the World War II generation created a New Deal for the national economy. To build a green future, Foster says, traditional unionized jobs from carpenters to sheet metal workers to steel workers will be needed. The United Auto Workers Union has decided to endorse Senator Barack Obama for president. In a statement released Tuesday, UAW President Ron Gettelfinger said that, quote, after a historic primary campaign which activated and mobilized millions of voters, our union is proud to endorse Senator Barack Obama. Gettelfinger said Obama has inspired our country with a positive vision for a better America and with concrete plans to turn that vision into reality. Here's today's economic report. Barack Obama says the economic suffering of working people is directly tied to trickle-down style economic policy supported by George W. Bush and John McCain. Obama wants a government infusion of $50 billion more into the economy, an extension of unemployment benefits, more rebate checks to taxpayers, and an end to the Bush tax breaks for the wealthy. McCain wants to keep the Bush tax cuts and the tax breaks for big oil, and he opposes any more government money being pumped into the ailing economy. You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You can do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly, you hear me? In my creation. Oh.
is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any question before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today. As is always the case, when you schedule a congressman, a representative or a senator on your show, you never know for sure if they're going to make it this time of the day, because they often have votes. So we are kind of, we were just notified a few minutes ago that Congressman McDermott may or may not make the interview at 4:15, because they are having votes today on the bill for emergency extended unemployment compensation instead of tomorrow. So that's what we just got from the Speaker's office anyway, just a few moments ago. So sorry for the late notice. There's a chance you might not be able to do the interview. They're having votes today on the bill instead of tomorrow. So we shall wait and see. They were supposed to call in at 4:15, and maybe that'll happen, and maybe it won't. Anyway, let's just move on with it. Let's just say it's not going to happen and move on. When they say it might not be able to happen, why, it probably is not going to. I promised everybody yesterday that I want to talk a whole lot about John McCain today. And, you know, he is a guy that, unlike Bob Dole, when Bob Dole ran, there are just mountains of material available for John McCain. He's been around for a long, long time. Of course, Bob Dole had been as well. A little different than the Junior Bush thing. He hadn't been around national politics that much, but his daddy had, and there was a lot of information on him too. Of course, a lot of it never saw the light of day. But John McCain, as we all know, was involved in the Keating Five, which was a very dishonest scheme by five of our... Well, we had Concini, we had John Glenn, we had John McCain all involved in that. Highly respected gentleman. So, and anyway, there's a lot of meat on the bone out there when we want to talk about John McCain. And as you know, I'm unalterably opposed to having John McCain. There are even some of the bozos that they had running that I would rather have had as a Republican candidate than I would John McCain. Why? Number one, I don't trust him. Number one, he's not who he says he. Number two, he's not who he says he was. And sure, John Sidney McCain has disagreed with Junior Bush on a few issues. And that's why the media lets him get away with calling himself a maverick. But on most of the important issues, however, it would be more of the same with John Sidney McCain. And don't let anybody tell you different. That is why Junior Bush has said he's ready to do anything to have John Sidney McCain elected president, and he's going to raise funds for him. Well, as you all know, Cheney and him aren't raising funds like they were raising funds before. They're not quite so popular now. But Bush knows perfectly well that a McCain presidency would in fact be like a third term for his own failed presidency. So people who like what Bush has done or undone during the last 8 years should vote for McCain with very little fear of being disappointed. And in particular, they'd love his militarism and what I feel, and I wonder if you agree with me, his absolutely overbearing character. And on the other hand, those who felt betrayed or who have been the victims of the Bush-Cheney administration, and that includes the 81% of the Americans who believe their country's on the wrong track right now. That's a tough number to fight if you're John Sidney McCain. They should think twice before, in essence, extending this disastrous Bush presidency one further day than necessary. So let's take a look. Let's take a look at John Sidney McCain. For one, McCain's expected, as one commentator put it a while back, to behave as George W. Bush on steroids. And some go as far as depicting him as a candidate who aspires to become President McBush because so many of his policies would duplicate Bush's policies. And for example, McCain is partisan of the imperial presidency theory, advanced and practiced in recent years by the Bush-Cheney administration. And as recently as last May the 6th, he confirmed that if he were elected president, he would enthusiastically throw out the restraint on power established by the constitutional checks and balances and would embrace the Bush-Cheney claim of near-absolute executive power. Tell me something. Do we need another administration that wants to solidify this claim of absolute executive power? I don't think so. The founding fathers of this country didn't put anything in there about anybody being a king. And that's exactly where Bush and Cheney have tried to take this thing with the executive office, and McCain would take it even farther. And McCain is especially worried that the courts could stick to the letter and the spirit of the U.S. Constitution and reject attempts by the president to establish sort of a, what do you call it, a quasi-dictatorship, while dismissing Congress prerogatives. In other words, in McCain's words, presidential executive power in the U.S. is too constrained by a judiciary, and he said this, and I quote him, that shows little regard for the authority of the president. What do they want? They want him just to get rid of the courts and the Congress and say, here, we'll elect you, you decide everything? That's what he's saying. But on this very question, on the other hand, McCain seems to want it both ways. Is this sincere? Or is it a way to just create confusion? On 15th of May, he tried to distance himself from the Bush-Cheney administration, and he professed that he now embraces the constitutional concept of checks and balances. So here we go one more time. Which McCain is the real McCain? Which one? Obviously, he needs to explain that. And that's an issue that Obama should hammer. He should hit him right between the eyes with that. In any debate he has, he needs to really bring that one home. And secondly, on foreign policy, more than anywhere else, McCain can be expected to be a McBush plus. I think we all know that. All thinking people know that. He can be expected to be some sort of a mixture of the, what else can you call him but simplistic, Junior Bush, and of a rabidly nationalistic and interventionist Dick Cheney. The last two always ready to immorally bomb people and ask questions later. And if you've kept track of McCain's actions and words over the last couple of years, you completely understand that McCain stands ready to continue the Bush-Cheney's insane foreign policy. Therefore, no one should expect that he'd be much different than what his duo stood for over the last 8 years, which is their brand of some sort of aggressive global interventionalism. And it's been a disaster. An absolute disaster. Under McCain, the United States would still be the global bully of the planet, and this was going to lead to more geopolitical instability worldwide, more debt for the United States, more economic disruptions in trade, especially for oil and commodity, and drive the prices even higher. And there's going to be a high economic price to pay with the McCain presidency. Make no mistake about that. This current slowdown or recession there's just going to be more of that to come. And why not? If he's going to continue the disastrous Bush-Cheney policies, why wouldn't there be more to come? You watch and you listen to John McCain, and you will soon have the feeling that he's never met a war he didn't like. If it was up to him, American soldiers would still be in Vietnam. Where, as I've mentioned many times, he was a pilot flying fighter bombers that dropped bombs over North Vietnam. He's mentioned on several occasions that he'd like to intervene even more directly in South America. Now imagine that. And in the Middle East, he said that he would not mind having an American military occupation of that region for another 100 years. It's fascinating to me that he would say that. Just unbelievable. Here it is again.
And a lot of people now say the surge is working.
Anybody who knows the facts on the ground say that.
If
yes.
It's working, Senator, do you now have a better estimate of when American forces can come home from Iraq?
No, but that's not too important. What's important is the casualties in Iraq.
No, but that's not too important. A man is running for the presidency of the United States, and he's asked about bringing home our troops from an illegal, immoral war in Iraq, and he says that's not important? I heard that, and I thought, oh my God. It's not important. It's not important to bring our soldiers home from Iraq, and our Marines, and our Air Force personnel, and our Navy personnel. Not important. A man wants to sit in the Oval Office and be the Commander-in-Chief of the United States military, and he makes a statement that it's not important to bring the people home from Iraq? How'd you like to be sitting over there carrying that 50-pound backpack right now? Having people shooting at you, even if they're not shooting at you, you're over there on your God knows how many tours. You haven't been able to come home because they won't let you come home. And then you hear some ass say something like that. They love our military. They love them. They want to keep them over there from till hell won't have it. They didn't send them with the proper armaments and all that. They don't want to pass a GI Bill to give them all the things that they need when they get out of the military. But other than that, they love them. Oh, they love them, and so is John Sidney McCain. They would have you believe that. Wouldn't mind having an American military occupation of that region for another 100 years. You know, in McCain's view, Iraq is an American colony forever. And they're going to make sure that there's going to be a permanent war and a permanent military occupation in that part of the world forever. Do not forget that in 1999, John McCain was among the group that lobbied the Clinton administration to have the U.S. invade Yugoslavia with ground troops. You know, let's face it. America's founders would be turning in their graves if they could see their cherished republic becoming a militaristic empire. And that's exactly where it's headed. And once again, we have a man, thirdly, of the list of things I wrote down about John McCain. He doesn't seem to know or care about international law. If you think that's not a continuation of the Bush-Cheney administration, they don't know or care about international law either. And indeed, not only is Senator McCain constantly confusing the Sunnis and the Shias in Iraq after all these years, after all those trips he's made over there that he likes to try and impress us with, he doesn't even know who he's talking to when he gets there. But he seems to be completely lost as to the true meaning of preemptive war versus preventive war. A preemptive war or a preemptive strike is a self-defense measure which is taken against a foreign country that poses some sort of an imminent, and that's the crucial word here, imminent and inevitable threat because it's about to invade or is threatening to attack shortly. A preventive war, on the other hand, is a war of choice. Or it's a war of aggression that we launched, or they said we launched it for that reason, in anticipation of a loss of security or a strategic advantage in a more or less faraway future, or to gain some sort of foreign territories or resources, which is exactly what we've done in Iraq. And while a preemptive war is essentially defensive in nature, a preventive war is fundamentally imperialistic. And when you listen to John McCain talk about it, you can tell that these two notions are totally confused. Since he says that he wouldn't rule out launching preemptive wars, when in fact he means launching preventive wars of aggression against future enemies. Future enemies, that he says, who pose no immediate threat to the United States whatsoever that most people can see. A preemptive war, sometimes, could be legal and justifiable, and it could be in accordance with Article 51 of the United Nations Charter. But a preventive war, because it's planned and it's an overt act of aggression, is never legal. Never, according to international law. Somebody tell Mr. McCain about that. And fourthly, it seems that Mr. McCain is a man who has a chip on his shoulder. Compare the two. It's very reminiscent of George W. Bush, and that makes him a dangerous man to be trusted as a leader of a heavily armed country like the United States. Can you say bomb, 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 bomb Iran? You know, you're remembering his days as a Navy pilot and a prisoner during the Vietnam War almost 50 years ago. He now says that he would like to go to Cuba to punish those Cuban soldiers who hurt his buddies in Vietnam. The Cuban government has answered him that there were no Cuban soldiers in Vietnam, but he keeps that grudge on going, and he's not going to forget about it. And another parallel with Mr. Bush is the fact that McCain, who's going to be 72 years old in August, attended a naval academy, and they have this very much in common, do they not? He attended the naval academy in Annapolis, the United States Naval Academy, where he ranked near the bottom of his class. He was 894th out of 899 students. So don't expect him to be any kind of philosopher president, just like the one we've got right now. He's going to lead with his guts rather than his head, just like the one we've got right now. And you don't want to forget in all of this that McCain is a neocon candidate. He's as much of a neocon as anybody in Washington. The Israel lobby and the neocons, and I'm talking about a small group of misguided ideologues who've constantly whispered advice into George W. Bush's ears for years, and that idiot has taken their advice, and who've begun whispering into McCain's ears, they would be delighted to have a militarily hawkish and neocon McCain in the White House. For this, this would be a dream come true for these folks. Their pet project, a war against Iran, would almost definitely become a reality if it doesn't become a reality later on this year, right before the election. Don't forget, McCain was born on a U.S. military base in a foreign country, in Panama. And he's the son, and he's the grandson of military career individuals. And that might explain why he's so enamored with anything military. This is a guy who believes that there's a military solution to almost any political problem. And so therefore, I think he could be expected to follow the neocon-inspired so-called Bush Doctrine. God, I hate to have anything, you know, in quotes like Bush Doctrine. And he would also be expected to embrace the neocon's imperialistic and extreme right-wing project for the new American century. The old PNAC group that blatantly calls for American global dominance. So, armed with these two doctrines, McCain, if he's elected president, would stand ready to launch future gratuitous and illegal wars of aggression around the world to ensure American supremacy. That's the way these people see it. Those who like George W. Bush will love John McCain. That 28% of morons who still stay in the Bush camp, they must be just drooling over the prospect of getting John McCain into the White House, something they will not do. They'll get all the fireworks they want and more. Doesn't matter to them. You know, they'll get all whether this approach is good for the United States, for its economy, and for its reputation, to hell with that. They don't even care. And one other thing to consider, and we talked about it a little earlier in the program today, is the sixth thing on my list is Senator John Sidney McCain as president would absolutely be a gift from heaven to the military-industrial complex of the United States. And it's really easy to see why. McCain's on record for advocating to increase the size of the U.S. Armed Forces from the current 750,000. He wants to bump it up to 900,000. See, we can have multiple wars going on. We can have quite a few of them going on at the same time. You think with another 150,000 troops, we could add another one on right now, huh? Yeah. Under his governance, the Pentagon and a host of defense contractors would see the U.S. defense budget already bloated to the point of being larger than the defense spending, as we mentioned earlier, of all the rest of the 191 countries in the world added together. That budget's going to swell even more. And add to that the fact that John McCain has surrounded himself with a host of far-right lobbyists to run his campaign and raise money. This means that if he's ever elected, he'll be a prisoner of these far-right elements. Not a promising perspective, I assure you. And seventh on my list today, Senator John McCain has supported George W. Bush's huge tax cuts for the rich, which have resulted in large budget deficits, and which have contributed so much to placing the United States in its current very, very precarious economic situation. That is to say, being saddled with a falling currency that hardly anybody's talking about, and a rapidly spreading financial crisis. The housing crisis and the banking crisis is just the beginning of all this, and it's no wonder that George W. Bush has enthusiastically endorsed John McCain. That might end up to being a double-edged sword, since Bush's approval rating in the U.S. is the lowest of any American president, and a large majority of Americans believe their country's heading in the wrong direction. And the eighth thing on my list, and I've mentioned this many times on this program, that I believe that John McCain's personal character is absolutely open to question. He is known, and this from his early childhood, to be prone to sudden and uncontrollable fits of temper tantrums. It's reported by biographer Robert Timberg, in his book John McCain, An American Odyssey, that right up into his 20s, he remained a strikingly violent man, ready to fight at the drop of a hat. This rage seems to be at the core of his personality, describing his own childhood. McCain has admitted to having a quick temper and a short fuse. In his book, Worth the Fighting For, a memoir, and get this, I was shocked by this, He has confessed that as a youngster, at the smallest provocation, and I'm quoting him now, at the smallest provocation, I would go off into a mad frenzy and then suddenly crash to the floor unconscious. When I got angry, I held my breath until I blacked out. Then his parents would be forced to soak him in cold water, clothes and all, to wake him up. This is out of the mouth of John McCain. A man with a character like that is a dangerous man to be entrusted with responsibility of custody of nuclear weapons. And as you have heard, you haven't heard it so much lately, because they're all falling in line now, but even some of his Republican Senate colleagues say that he's too reckless to be commander-in-chief. And this is on top of his aggressive militaristic stance in foreign policy and his obvious and avowed lack of knowledge in economic matters. He's admitted that. The ninth thing on my list about John McCain is that there's a legitimate question, and a lot of people hate me for saying this, and I don't care. It's a legitimate question of his age and his personal health. The New York Times has recently been complaining about the lack of medical information regarding the presumptive Republican candidate and how little people know about his health. And this is not a trivial matter, since McCain will be 72 years old in August and is recovering from an August 2000 surgery for a melanoma cancer, which is the deadliest of all cancers. And a recently released medical report does not alleviate a bit concerns about this very issue. And tenth on my list, since the media have criticized Senator Barack Obama for his close association with an outspoken black minister, Reverend Wright, it's worth noting that Senator John McCain was endorsed by probably one of the worst right-wing religious bigots and fanatics in the U.S. today, and that's that idiot Texan anti-Catholic televangelist John Hagee. He willingly took this man's endorsement. Willingly. And let's remember that the televangelist Hagee had also said that, you know everything he said about the Hurricane Katrina was God's punishment to New Orleans. He took the endorsement of a man who said something like that. So it is legitimate to ask why there's all this media attention on Barack Obama's association with the controversial pastor. There wasn't that much about McCain. So, concluding my thoughts about John McCain today and why I think, my list, I think he's a scary man to be elected to President of the United States, when you connect all the dots, it would seem to me to be absolutely clear that Senator John Sidney 100 years McCain has got to be considered a man that's far too dangerous and far too unpredictable to be entrusted with the presidency of a heavily armed country like we have. And do Americans really want a guy whom some of his colleagues in the Senate call him Senator Hothead to become President Hothead and put him in the position of high responsibility? I hope that enough Americans will reflect about all of that before the events unfold, not afterwards. I think we'd be in a hell of a shape if we put this man in as President of the United States. If Americans really believe, and as we know, most of them do, if we really believe that this country's headed in the wrong direction, does it really make sense to line up behind a candidate who wants to go even further in the same direction? Unless you doubt that he's heading in the same direction as Junior Bush, you take a look at his voting record over the past few years and you will see that he's been right with Bush. The idea of calling him a maverick is ridiculous. I guess if you're a Republican and you vote once against the party line, then you're a maverick. And that's almost virtually how it is with John Sidney McCain. And as an aside, personally, do you want to know what one of the things that just galls me the most about John Sidney McCain is? You'll think this is trivial, but to me it is not. Every time I see him standing beside Joe Lieberman, it just enrages me. I don't know why anybody want to be seen with Joe Lieberman. I don't know why anybody would take his counsel. I don't know why anybody would trust him. Not ever. I've said before and I'll say again, Al Gore, how could you have done that? I said so then. I remember the day when Al Gore announced his choice for vice president and just bowled me over. No, because I didn't care for Joe Lieberman then. But that's frosting on the cake for me with John Sidney McCain. I think we're going to pause for a little break right now. Let's see, where are we at here on the schedule? Actually, that's a joke, me saying a schedule on the program. We will pause for a break right now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
The sun's young gone, no hammer, no light. The moon and the man will be rolling all night. Scorpio's up a leading old into pasture. And the hours behind are always too few. The miles between can begin to undo the feeling that you never see another like her. And the lonesome ways and the young and foolish days, and the kid who made the man who leave you. With the sink of the ship, I'm gonna dip to color me like a color you, the color of a lonely heart, and the color of a lonely heart is blue. Thank you.
No more walks in the wood. The trees have all been cut down, and where once they stood, not even a wagon rut appears along the path. Low brush is taking over. No more walks in the wood. This is the aftermath of afternoons in the clover fields, where we once made love, then wandered home together, where the trees arched above, where we made our own weather, when branches were the sky.
You here on the Guy James Show today. See, it seems like I've done all the talking. If you'd like to do some of it, give us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Got a note from one of my cyber friends, Papa Mocha, and wanted to talk a few minutes about the price of gas. And not that you need to hear this, but every single energy bill in recent years where Big Brother Oil was involved has taken a nosedive in the ring of our nation's government. Think about that. Every single one. And doesn't it kind of make you go, hmm? And I'm, of course, I'm talking about this windfall tax thing. The current legislation would have imposed heavy taxes on Big Brother Oil if they did not invest a lot of their mega profits into the alternative energy sources. And it would have stripped out $17 billion in big tax credits for Big Brother Oil Incorporated in Washington, D.C. And Republicans in the Senate killed it. And there was a small service. There was no flowers, no formal funeral, just a bunch of fellows in the Senate going, oh, gee willikers, you know. And over to New York Times, they have this on the Republican Party in the U.S. Senate telling the American people that $17 billion in U.S. Treasury funds are better spent by Big Brother Oil than you pesky gas-guzzling ne'er-do-wells that have to drive your cars to work. Yes, we'd rather give it to the people that are already making obscene profits than we would in some fashion turning it over to the folks who don't have a pot, who can't afford to drive to work. We'd rather give it to the oil companies. It makes you wonder. It just makes you want to cry sometimes. That how they could get away with this. And, you know, the story yesterday, the out of the Washington Post, the Democratic proposal to impose heavier taxes on big oil companies stalled in the Senate on Tuesday as Republicans and Democrats offered different ideas on how to deal with soaring energy costs. A bill that would have rolled back some $17 billion in tax breaks on big oil and pressured the companies to invest in new energy sources by hitting them with a windfall profits tax if they did not failed to get enough votes and to move forward. 51 senators voted to bring the measure up for consideration, but that was 9 short of the number needed under Senate rules. 43 senators, most of them Republican, voted no. And people wonder why the Republican Party is looked at as the party of big business and screw the rest of you. People actually wonder that? Is it just me? I don't know. Is it just me? Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
Oh, hello. This is Lilo. From Lilo 36, from the chat room, and from Pittsburgh.
Hey, nice to hear from you.
Really nice. I didn't recognize your voice over my phone. This is... I thought I was talking to another person.
Oh.
But I wanted to say this was a wonderful piece about John McCain today. Your top 10 list, I would think, for today or for the whole campaign season.
Well, I certainly hope everybody is able to find out all of that about John McCain. Is something everybody should know, yeah, every bit of it.
True. And it is very good that you are doing all of this work and all of this research. Some of the things you mentioned I had read before, but others I had no idea of. I didn't know about his childhood tendencies, for example.
I didn't even know that was possible to hold your breath until you passed out. Did you? I don't think I have the discipline to do that.
I think I would want to breathe.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. But another reason why I called in, Guy, and I'm sure you didn't exactly mean it the way it came out. I wanted to disagree a little bit with you about the family values.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how you meant it. You referred to the family values of what is implied by the Republican fundamentalist.
Yeah, it implies you're good and I'm we're good and you're not.
Yeah, but I would like to disagree that I say that we should talk about family values, but in a different way. Since and the reason for that is since we have chosen the nuclear family as a way to organize society in at the lowest level, we should talk about the values we should have in order to make the nuclear family work.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
These morals the others are talking about, they are not something we are born with. They are, we are raised with them. So we should talk about the education that is necessary. The good, the finances, at least somewhat, secure finances at a basic level to make a nuclear family survive. Probably, you know, some of the things the fundamentalists are talking about. You know, there are some ethics or some moral values we should hold, and the family should have the time in order to teach these values.
Well, there is a disintegration of the nuclear family that you're talking about, and it is a shame. So many people, both parents have to work, and that has a profound effect on the family. I mean, I know they need the money, but it has an effect on the kids. I agree with you on that. The fundamentalist, many of the fundamentalist values are values that we should all hold. It's just that when they get heavily involved in politics is when I kind of like
True.
To draw the line.
Yeah, and although I have done it right now also, focusing on the, quote, normal nuclear family is probably not necessarily a way to go, too. We have many types of families these days. But most families have one thing in common, and that is they have financial problems. They have to work too hard. Some of them don't have the time to educate their children. Some of them don't have the time to spend time with their children. I think I'm one of the few people left who actually at dinner time. Cooked dinner and sat around the table and talked.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know. I remember that well from my childhood. And you know, you think back, I've never mentioned this before, but my own mother, as it is common with people my age, my mother was a product of the Depression, and so was my father. And my mother had to quit school in the eighth grade, never got to finish her education, and go out and help sell pies so that the family could get by. And we came so far since then. And now it seems that we're slipping backwards.
Definitely regressing, yes.
Yes, we are. And that's a doggone shame. And, you know, people of my parents' ilk, their ages and so forth, that went through those hard times in the Depression, they were so proud of the fact that they were able to give us things that they couldn't have and make life better for us than it was for them when they were children. And as you said, sit around the family table at dinner time and talk and discuss what real family values really are. And it saddens me that we are slipping backwards from that. We are regressing. It's a sad thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It certainly is. My grandmother used to say that, for example, work honors. I'm translating that right now, but you are. It is honorable to work.
Oh yes,
is what she meant. And of course, as a teenager or as a younger child, roll my eyes and say, "Okay, that's one of the older folks talking." But as you can tell now, since I'm an older folk, I can still remember that, and I don't shy away from hard work, be it at the desk or be it physical work. And just little things like that to me, for example, is also a value that everyone should hold.
Sure. You have to if you're going to live a good life. Well, you shouldn't have to, I mean, if you inherited a fortune, but that's part of a good life is working hard.
Yeah. And it is a value that was passed down because my grandmother had the time to do it, to teach me that. Although I went to school, there was enough time to have to listen to that because we did spend dinner time together.
Sure.
You're
right about that. It was a different work ethic at one time. My father started out life working for my father at his workplace, and he was my boss. And he used to tell me, and he was right. If you're at work and you're working for somebody and you're getting paid, if you're goofing off and not doing your job, he said, that's the same as stealing. You're stealing from your employer for not working hard. So I guess you and I come from the same cloth, basically.
Yeah, and it's those little things, you know, that was expressed simplistically, but it, as an adult, it gives you a work ethic.
Oh, yes.
It gives you, for example, what your father said, it gives you the reason to sit down behind the mic and do this. I'm sure it's not always convenient.
No, it is not.
and you do it anyhow.
Yeah.
But all of our examples, I think, are just a sign of having to support a family, make sure that we have the kind of society that provides, that is set up to provide for the basic needs for a family, so that they can do these things, that they can go to the next level and can work on relationship building and teaching of values.
You're so right. I think the country would be a whole lot better off if everybody was taught to know that if you could feed your family and you could live a relatively decent lifestyle materialistically and moralistically and all that, that you don't need the luxuries, you don't need all this. You can be happy with less if you have the right family situation and know in your heart that when you go to bed at night you can pay your bills and that your kids are being raised to do the right thing and are doing the right thing. The country would be a whole lot happier place, I think, if we could all count on that.
true. I just wonder where exactly it went all wrong. I mean, I think I know where when it started to be that bad, but how could people be persuaded that being rich or, super rich, going after material values at nearly all costs?
All costs is the right word, too.
Yeah.
It certainly is.
To me, it seemed, I've been in this country since 1972, to me, it seems like that happened since, maybe the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
Mid-80s. Anyhow, I think that Democrats, liberals, should talk about family values, but just in different terms.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm up against the clock. Thank you so much for a great call. Please call back anytime. I appreciate hearing from you.
Certainly.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Ken.
Well, it's been an interesting show today, and I hope it was interesting for you. Was it good for you? It was good for me. I appreciate having all of you listen to the program today. I always do. And it's good to get your input. I appreciate your emails. I do want to remind you once again, and this is a critical note, I'm telling you. we are in need of support to keep the show going. It's necessary to raise some funds right now, and I know not everybody's got any funds to spare, but it is important if we're going to keep the show going. So do remember that. You can head on over to the website, www.theguyjamesshow.com.